Blog Talk Radio.
Chatting with Sherry is brought to you by Patreon listeners like you. If you would like to join their ranks, go to patreon.com/rethebard. That's patreon.com/RIPHEBARD. And follow Sherry on all the various social networks at rethebard. That's RIPHEBARD. And now, from the studios in San Diego, California, here's Sherry.
Thank you, Everett Robert, for introducing the show. I want to thank everybody for all your votes so far for the chatty. The live listen winners for the chatty are Anthony and Julie Sharp. Their show was amazing, and it just was kept whipping up while the live listens were going, and they won. So yay, Anthony and Julie. But for the download chatties, we're going to announce the winner on the 31st of December. So listen to the shows you love to get the people you want to win to win. Keep going. Today we're going to talk to a former chatty nominee, Lee Murray. She's a talented author. She's an award-winning author. She is one of my dear friends, and she actually wrote a little horror story that I read for Halloween, and that's how we met. Hi, Lee.
Hi, Sherry. How are you today?
I'm okay. How are you?
Good. I'm up. The postman's already been. It's just 8 o'clock in the morning here in New Zealand, and I'm sitting here in my living room looking at the sunshine with my cup of coffee. So, it's looking like it's going to be a good day. It's the last working day of the year here in before the summer break in New Zealand. So, I think it's going to be a good one.
You know, I've never actually talked about this with you before. You know, my favorite show was shot in New Zealand, Xena, Warrior Princess.
Mm-hmm.
Did you
see
it being shot?
No. Actually, I think most of that time I was living abroad, so I didn't. But, yeah, there are some locations you can still whip around and have a look. And it's a little bit like the whole Lord of the Rings thing. There are lots of film locations and spots where we actually filmed the shows around New Zealand that you can sort of stop by and, you know, get out of your car and go and have a look at. So, yeah, but I was actually living abroad. I was actually living in Europe when that show was quite big. So no, I can't say I saw any of it being filmed.
Because I was just like, did you see Lucy and Renee doing thing? And that would be cool.
Yeah, it's a small place, and everybody's sort of connected, so you kind of know. You know people who know people, and so it's kind of nice. You know, not that long ago, I was in the airport, and I happened to meet a young actor, and that people see on the television a lot, and it's kind of nice. And I just bowled up and said hi, and he had a little chat, and it's New Zealand's quite nice for that. We're sort of, you can run into your member of parliament in the street, and they will stop and talk to you. That is the beauty of a small place. You know, it's quite a nice thing. It is quite nice.
That's really cool. That is really cool that you can actually talk to people in parliament.
yeah, absolutely. Well, exactly. You know, it is. Just, and a lot of them live locally, which is really nice, and they turn up to schools and things like that, and it's not such a big deal. You know, I guess perhaps we don't have to have quite the security requirements that you have in the United States. So not that long ago, I went through the Prime Minister's residence in New Zealand. They had a sort of kind of a patrimony type day, and they just opened a lot of those public buildings up for people, for the public to go and have a look at. And, you know, there's no gun check or anything like that in New Zealand. There are, like, some retired people, and, you know, kept the queue in order, and we just walked in. there's no checking of bags or any of that kind of thing. It was very, come and have a look. This is where the Prime Minister lives. And, which is, we didn't even take our shoes off, you know, that was just lovely. And I think that's kind of a very nice thing about New Zealand, is that we are still, you know, it's still very open and friendly, and there's not that sort of separation and distance between between the people who are in office and the public, you know. So you, if you want to speak about an issue that's burning to you, you can call your Member of Parliament up and speak to them, you know. It's rather nice.
You're making me jealous.
Yeah, but you know, it's the downside is we have a small voice too. So, you know, that's on the world stage, you know, we don't necessarily have the voice that the United States has. So, you know, there's swings and roundabouts.
Well, when I went to England, this was years ago, one of the cool things was going to some place like where the House of Commons were. We weren't allowed in the House of Lords. We were allowed to go in the House of Commons and to look and see what they did, to check out the, you know, they actually showed us a robe during the tour, and it was really cool. I knew I may never come to England again, so I was a tourist, and I took tours. I went by myself. It was the only way for me to do it.
Oh, sometimes I think that's a great idea. You can really learn a lot. You know, that the tours are set up for, you know, really for you know, the maximum of information you can get, as much as you want to get out of the trip. You know, so. You know, I think in New Zealand, I've been lucky. You know, as I said, I've got a friend who was recently in Parliament, and we've just changed government, so he's not in now. But he took the time. He was in the Beehive, which is our government building, and he took the time to arrange a tour for me of the library in the government, you know, building, and absolutely beautiful old library. It's wooden, and it survived a massive fire of the Parliament buildings early on in our history, and it's just an absolutely gorgeous building. And in that library, they have one of the only paintings of Sir Julius Vogel, who was a former prime minister and who wrote science fiction and fantasy. And his name is the name of our science fiction and fantasy awards here in New Zealand. So that's quite something to be able to go into your national library, and it's a private library, it's an archive library, but have a look at this very famous painting. So that was really special. And that's the kind of thing that kind of happens in a small place, you know, those sort of networking opportunities which open doors for you. And I think the thing, Sherry, that's really interesting for us here in New Zealand is because we are small, and, you know, and we do make a little bit of a splash, you know, from time to time as a centre of excellence for film and things like that, that the networking thing is so important, and I think you understand that with your show here. You know, you really do connect people. And for me, for a little New Zealander, you know, I can get my voice heard on your show, and it's that little step into the global marketplace, if you like, because as I said before, we have a bit of a small voice. We're just a little country down on the bottom of the world. So these kind of networking things are fantastic for talent and artists and writers and people like myself who, you know, we have a small voice, and, you know, discovering our work on the world stage is really hard. So these kind of networking things are really, really fantastic. And in a small place, you can do that on a sort of local level, but on a global level, it really means we need these connections.
It is really interesting, isn't it? One of the things that's really cool is that we were talking before the show, and I was saying that I have this tendency that after I do a show, I become friends with the people who are guests on the show. So basically, I have friends.
Yeah.
know, I that's just the kind of person I am. But it's weird because I have friends in New Zealand and Australia, England, and Japan, and all over the world, all over the globe, and it's just like this really strange thing. I hear something happen someplace that I know people are, that I'm friendly with. I go, oh my God, my friends are in trouble, and it's like they're on the other side of the planet. You think about it, and then you're going, I don't care, and you just start sending out messages to make sure everybody.
Yeah, that is, it does bring the world together a little bit, you know, there's social media connections and this kind of thing. But I think for artists it's really important to have that, you know, connection with other people in other countries and other writers and also readers, because they bring a different perspective to the work. So, it's been one of the key things that I've been doing this year, is trying to sort of increase my network of people I know I've been part of a lot of writing organizations and Facebook groups and those kinds of things, but I've sort of tried to stretch out and get a little bit more involved and be a little bit more active this year in some of the organizations I'm involved with, because I really do think that those networking opportunities just open doors. They make opportunities, and you learn so much from these different writers and different in different sort of in the North America or Europe, they have different barriers and opportunities. So it is. It's been a good year for that. I have to say, I've been the secretary of New Zealand's Speculative Fiction Writers Group, and that's a great group. So one of the projects we've done this year is to put out a showcase anthology of the work from that group, and that book will be coming out, I think, early in the new year. So been excited about that, because, you know, it's nice to have something like a sampler for readers to get a chance, who haven't perhaps seen our work, to get a chance to read New Zealand speculative science fiction and fantasy writers. So that's the kind of thing, you know, these little projects that allow us, a little bit like me coming on your show, it's these little projects that allow us to sort of have a little voice and for people to hear us in different places.
Anthologies seem to be becoming popular again. It's very interesting because I've interviewed a few people, and they seem to be popping up more than they have in the last years past. A science fiction anthology, horror anthology, mystery anthology, fantasy. People seem to be short stories are becoming something that people are doing more. I think that's good, because when I grew up, that's what I read Agatha Christie and Dorothy Sayers and Isaac Asimov and Ray Bradbury. They all did short stories. People don't
Yeah. It's a really tough media to do well in, because, you know, a short story is basically, it's the Brussels sprout of cabbage, you know, it's basically they're concentrated, and you have to start the story very late and leave early, and you know, you have to build a whole world in a very short number of words. So they're a real test of a writer's skill, in my opinion. And so, if you want to experience new writer and maybe not and take a small risk, you know, not have to necessarily buy a whole novel, but you might sort of, I might spend an hour and I'd get to know a new writer. And so anthologies are fantastic for that, because you get 20 stories from 20 different writers, and you get a sampler, which I think is a fantastic idea. You know, you can have... You know, you can enjoy one story on the way to work on your commute, for example, and you know, you can get a whole world in a tiny little, you know, 7,000 word story. So have it and enjoy it over coffee, or that, you know, those places where you're waiting in the doctor's office and you've got 15 minutes to wait. Then they're fantastic opportunity to sample a writer and then perhaps discover someone new, and then you can go and, of course, and see what else they've got and what other novels they might have, or screenplays or anything that you might be interested in. So I think as a sampler, they're a fantastic idea, really, really good. I mean, I often recommend them, and I often put them on my Christmas list, to be honest, because it's a great way to be introduced to new work.
Yeah, and also, okay, this is one of the things I find really funny. I actually put this on Instagram. I have the weirdest way of discovering new writers. When I get into reading something, I become very passionate. I read not only every book by them, I also read all the biographies I can get on them. I read a little bit of information, especially somebody I really like Agatha Christie or Jane Austen or Charlotte Bronte or Dorothy Sayers and people like that. So way I learned about other authors, like my first love was murder mysteries. When I was a little girl, Agatha Christie and Ellery Queen were my favorites. And my dad loved that I was a reader, and every Hanukkah I got a stack of whichever one I was reading. But then as I got older, I wanted to know more about the actual author because I wanted to write, so I wanted to know more. So I got the autobiography of Agatha Christie. I got the magazines of Ellery Queen and found out there were two different guys and their name wasn't Ellery Queen and the whole thing was made up. Did you ever read any Ellery Queen?
Yeah, I did as a kid. Yes, absolutely. I think what you're saying is interesting, Sherry, because you know, in the day, absolutely, when we were younger.
Lee? Lee's calling in from New Zealand, and I'm afraid her call dropped, so she'll call right back. Well, that's as the telephone lines will allow. I'm sorry about this. It's also the holidays, so probably a lot of people on the phone. While she's gone, I just want to let you guys know that we're going to be doing a book fair, and Lee's going to be a part of the book fair. I have a lot of great authors that are going to be in the book fair, people that have been on the show, like Stephen Sears, is going to be in it, and Brooks Wachtel. Misty Good is going to be in it. Melissa Good. She wrote the Darn Carey books. There's going to be a lot of new authors, too. And Kevin J. Anderson. He's going to be in it. Award-winning writer, Kevin J. Anderson. Lee's back.
Hi.
Hi, I'm so glad you're back. I was telling everybody about the book fair while you were gone.
Oh, yeah, that's a great idea. Yes, well, there's an opportunity to sample some new writers that you haven't sampled before. And I think you've got some prizes and things going on, Sherry. So
yeah.
That'll be another way to sample and learn about writers perhaps you haven't read before. So, yeah, great idea.
Yeah, the book fair I've done every year on Christmas Day. Basically, it's just to keep me busy. Because to be honest, I don't celebrate Christmas. It's like a really dead day. My brother's watching football. I mean, there's really not much for me to do. So I started doing the Christmas Day book fair. Just to give me something to do.
Yeah, I think that happens, doesn't it? There's all the hype of the holidays and gifts and family and getting the food prepared, and then on the day you sort of go, huh, well that's that. And often there's those periods where, well, we're just waiting for the turkey to cook, or where actually you can be reading a book, or there are actually some quiet periods sometimes on Christmas Day. So yeah, that's a good idea. But it's nice for us writers, because we know that you're working hard for us on Christmas Day. And for those people who have forgotten to purchase something for someone, and there's that last minute opportunity to grab a book, which is, you know, always a fantastic gift. It's, I mean, it's always my favorite gift to get is a book. So, yeah.
Yeah, and also we're going to have, well, it used to be just a giveaway, but it's developed into a trivia giveaway. Where I
cool.
A trivia question, and the first person who answers wins the book. And most of the authors who take, not everybody, but most of the authors who take part contribute at least one, some two, some three, depends on the person, books to the trivia giveaway. So you, not only can you purchase a book, which everybody'd like you to do because it helps us poor starving artists, but also you, if you don't win the book, you can buy the book, and usually they're not that expensive because they're e-books most of the time. Some people, I put all links up, so you can buy regular hardcover, you can buy e-books, you can buy audio, whatever your little heart desires. It's a lot of fun, and it happens from morning till about mid-evening Pacific time. So, also, you get a preview on Christmas Eve, so you could check the blog, see what books are there, see what books are up for the trivia contest, and plot out. Well, you can buy the books right away, but for the trivia contest, that starts on Christmas morning. So, and yes,
cool.
I'm working very hard on it.
I think it's a lovely idea. I really do. And it's like an online little bookstore, you know, a little boutique bookstore online, you know, on Christmas Day, and nobody else is open. So I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, that's true. And, I plug all those books in, and then I make it all pretty, and I put little decorations onto the page, and I try to make it as attractive as I possibly can.
So what have you got planned for the new year coming up, Sherry? Is it going to be another big year for you in 2018?
I'm going to be going to a convention, Condor. That's
cool.
A local San Diego convention. I'm looking forward to that. I'm going to be on some panels and stuff, and I'll be signing my books. And I do have a couple things planned. I haven't announced them yet. One of them is I'm working on an audiobook for Entering My Second Half, my memoir. Yeah, I'm really excited. I'm in the process because I'm still auditioning the voiceover artist. I made the decision that I wasn't going to do it myself. It's a long book. And I don't know if I'm that good a voiceover artist. But I'm trying to find someone whose voice is as close to mine as possible. So it's not that easy.
No, it isn't. And it is important, I think, these things, when you're talking about audio books, it is important to get the right narrator. It really is, you know. I think so. And they do add a flavor to the work. So yeah, I think that's quite a process, isn't it? Working out just who is the right person to tell that story. But that is an exciting process for you, Sherry. So that'll keep you busy.
And then the other thing I'm doing, okay, this is insane, but I'm doing it. I'm decided that I've already expanded my play that was a radio play called Cat's Pajamas. It's the most popular of all the plays. I mean, it would have won the Chatty, but I, of course, I don't give myself an award because it's been tops since it came out.
That's great.
So I expanded it into a theater thing, and now next month I'm going to launch a Kickstarter to try to produce it.
That's fantastic. Oh, that's a big project for next year. So that's already looking like 2018 is already looking like it's going to be another frantically busy year for you.
Yeah, yeah. So those are the two projects that I haven't really talked about that I've been working very hard on.
Yeah, it's dangerous to be talking about what we're planning to do next year when we're still trying to wind down into the end of this one.
I'm still working on the book fair, to be honest. Those poor people that are auditioning, I'm like, yeah, this is really good. Could you give me another one? Because I want to hear a little bit more of your voice. And it's true, I do want to hear more of their voice, but I also, I don't have as much time yet to devote to that. So I'm like, I'm trying to get back to everybody who's auditioning as quickly as I can, because as an actor, I know you're on pins and needles, or are they going to pick me? But I also, I don't want to discount anybody until I'm sure whether or not they're not right or they are right. You know, it's like directing a play. You don't want to miscast it, but you also don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. At least I don't.
Yeah, and it's so like writing callbacks and submissions, you know, you submit your best work and then you wait and you wait and you wait for the editors to get back to you. And often it's not necessarily about, you know, it's like these people you're auditioning, it's not because they're not good, it's just they're not the right fit necessarily. And you want to have all the work in before you can make a reasonable call. And with an anthology, for example, there might be a theme and you might have one vampire story and you only want one, you don't want 10, you know, that kind of, so it's really tough, it's very difficult, and I know exactly what you're saying about, you know, not wanting to keep people waiting, but also wanting to make the best choice and have enough time to give each piece of work, that consideration that it deserves. So it is, it's a very similar process, and it's tough to be on either end, to be honest. You know, if you're the editor of an anthology, you want the best possible mix for your anthology, but also, you know, with the diversity of writers and stories, and then on the other hand, you want to get back to those writers as quickly as possible so they can move on, you know, and give them the feedback so they can carry on. So it is, it's a fine line, isn't it, between how much time it takes to make that decision and also being fair to the artists involved.
Right, and I also, because I am an artist and I am both a writer and an actress, I can't just say dislike and that they're on their way and that's it. I can't. I send each person an email explaining. your audition was really good, because they all are. I gotta say, every single one, I have not gotten a clinker. They've all been wonderful. It's just that I'm trying to get a certain voice, and I know it's terrible, but it's my memoir, so I want it to sound like me.
No, that makes sense. That makes sense. I could understand that. And actually, you know, people who attend sort of book launches and readings, you do get a different perspective when you hear a piece of work read by the author. Because they give it the inflection and intonation and the intensity that they intended when they wrote it. So it's actually quite interesting to hear a piece of work read by the author's voice. So if people get an opportunity to go to a book launch, and even if it's not necessarily a piece of work that you might have picked up ordinarily, it's often really exciting to hear a writer read from their own work and bring it to life really in the way that they would have, you know, they intended it. And so I can understand why it's so difficult to pick someone to tell your own story, you know, to get that nuance just right. I can understand that would be a very difficult process.
Yes, it is. And like I said, I'm trying to be fair, and I'm trying to give them their due. it's a very short, because it's an audition, so it's very short. There's a nuance to each. It's a talent. It's a different acting muscle. It's like when people are theater people and they come do my radio show, they're using a different muscle than they're used to. It's all your voice. So all the inflection, all the emotion, everything that you want to put through is in your voice. And that's sort of like what it is for an audiobook, but you're also the narrator, so it's a different thing.
I think with because when you're doing a play, surely the actors must bring their own perspective, and they add a different layer to. They bring their own character to the character that you've written on the page, and so they add something to the story. And in fact, it sometimes evolves as you're performing and practicing and rehearsing. To become something completely, slightly different, and maybe even completely different if they add their own sort of ad lib or whatever. But I think when you're talking about telling a story that is already on the page and it is a narration of your story, then that's slightly different. That's a different approach to telling a story, isn't it? It's not quite the same as presenting a radio play where you actually add to the performance and add to the words. You don't want that. You want someone who's going to interpret those words faithfully, because this is your story and not something that is a collaborative piece.
Yeah, that's true. Well, remember, it is written. I mean, a play is written. It is. I'm very open about my own stuff, but some people want their words exactly the way they wrote them because they feel that. I try to be fair, but if the author absolutely will not change that one line, I can't let the actor ad-lib it. So there are similarities between the written word and a play. Not like a movie. You know, a movie, the writer is the low man on totem pole. They're just like, they can change whatever they want. A play, the writer is the king. I heard that in other countries that's not true, but in Western theater, such as in the United States, Britain, Australia too, I think it must be New Zealand too.
I would assume so, yeah. It's interesting,
yeah,
isn't it?
Most places that are like that, the writer is, you know, they're like, you will go and do a Neil Simon play with Neil Simon in the audience and then change a line.
No, I see what you mean. But I mean, the inflection, or perhaps just, yes, I guess it's the, I mean, I guess when you're acting, the actor brings other things. They bring their facial expression, their gestures and their stance and their mannerisms, those kinds of things. So it's not just interpreting the words. Well, it is interpreting the words, but they're adding so much more, because there's all their body language and the costuming and all those kinds of things that contribute to make a play. So it isn't simply just, you're not just reading the words, obviously.
No, that's absolutely right. That is absolutely right. And I think it's like you said, it's a very collaborative thing, whereas written text of this type, where they're narrating a book, they're the people who are taking your baby and they're giving it to people who are driving their car or watching their baby or actual baby or whatever they're doing, or doing their work. A lot of people listen to books on tape when they're doing their work. And giving your story, whatever it is, whether it's your fictional story or your memoir or whatever it is, to them. So that's why it's hard. You want it to be your story, but you want to give the artist, who's the voiceover artist, the opportunity to shine. So it's sort of like, this is collaborative, just as radio theater is collaborative. It's just a little tweaky different.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So any more pitch books in your future, Sherry? Is that something that'll be on the cards for 2018?
Well, it's not a picture book, but I do have a new book that I'm working on. Actually, I've had a really hard year, so I haven't really done as much writing as I should. So I now have a stack of stuff that I need to work on, which will probably be 2018's job, will be to get some of these books out, because I have a historical drama. I have a children's book that's, well, more of a preteen book. That those are the two books I'm working on. And hopefully I'll have more time to write them.
Yes, it's squeezing it into the day, isn't it? There's just it is always about, you know, prioritizing time. I'm terrible for it. I'm dreadful for it. I have I'm involved in lots of writing groups and networks, so those keep me busy with various activities, you know, reviews and projects of that nature, and then split off some time from editing and those other works that I do. It's really hard to actually find that focused time to spend on writing, which is kind of still a solitary thing. The actual getting the words on the page is still a solitary thing. And then after that, you know, there's the networking to get that feedback that you need to improve the work and polish it to a state where you can put it out there in the world. But, finding that isolated time where you can concentrate on that work, that's not actually that easy.
No, it isn't. And see, I've been working on another book, but it's still a long way from finished. It's a thriller murder mystery. I haven't finished. It's not. I have no idea. I don't know about you, but I don't know how my books end. My fictional books. I don't know how they end.
It's a tough one, isn't it? When you can't see the ending, and I guess it's between the difference between, you know, writing by the seat of your pants, and writers call those pantsers, and someone who plots out their work carefully beforehand and have an idea of where they're going. There's still an element of discovery, because obviously, you know, your characters might do something different, or you might discover something as you're writing. But, you know, there's these two types of writers, and I originally was a pantser, and to a certain extent I still am, but it's problematic. It makes me slower, because I end up writing myself into a little corner, because I really don't know where the story is going, and you'll end up with a plot hole or a problem that you can't fix. So I do have a couple of manuscripts and drawers that are still, you know, waiting for me to come up with the fix to get me out of this corner that I've written myself into. But yes, I think that is a problem, isn't it, when you don't know where the story is going. And it does take that is a thing that takes a lot of time. If you can see the ending, then you just write your way towards it. But if you can't visualize it yet, and it takes some thinking or some research, then that does take a little more time.
This one's a little differently. It's actually, because it's a murder mystery, I actually know who the killer is. That part I know. I know who the killer is. I know what the thing is. I know what the secret is. I know where the MacGuffin is. I have all that stuff, and I have all the people plotted. I've got notes up the wazoo about everything. So it's sort of like a little bit of a combination of both, because I always leave it open. Because my characters always are fighting me if I say, well, you're going to do this. And they're like, no, I'm not. I'm doing this. character, because they actually, I know that sounds like I have schizo personality or something, but most writers are like that.
No, I think all writers have imaginary friends, Cherry. I think that's pretty normal.
I've talked to other authors and screenwriters and about that. One of them, Stephen L. Sears, he's like, and do your characters tell you what to do? And I go, yeah. He goes, good. That's the way it's supposed to be.
Yeah, actually, I'm not sure there's any supposed to be about it. I think everyone's process is a little different, and it's what works for you. So, you know, there is no right way to do it. It's just what works for you that you end up with an end product that you're proud of and that people enjoy.
Yeah, but it's so weird because, like you said, I do a very, very, very loose outline. I mean, it's like, remember when you were in school and they taught you how to write an outline where it's like A, B, C, D, 1, A1, B1, you know, remember that?
Yeah.
Basically what I do, and then I just leave it and I put it to the side, and then I go back to it when I need it. But it's very, I have, like, it's like I said, I have a weird mind. It's a combination of very structured and very loose. Does that make any sense?
No, that's pretty much what I've been. I'm trying to work on that. A very good friend of mine, my colleague Grace Bridges, who runs Splashdown Books, she's been teaching me a method called the Snowflake Method, which comes out of sort of a computer programming process, where you start with a core idea and then you build on it. So you sort of, you know, it's a little bit like making a snowball. You add a little bit of snow and you add a little bit of snow until you got, you know, a nice big snowball that you can throw. And I think that, and it's actually really helped my process. So if you think about pitching an idea, so, you know, if you imagine you went to the movies and you saw a movie and you say, well, I saw this great movie and it was about this boy, and then you tell a little bit about the plot and then the stakes. So, you know, it was about this boy, you know, who lived on a planet, and an evil empire came along and he had to, go off and save the world. So that's your general storyline, and then you build on that. Who helped him? You know, tell us a little bit about the world. You know, those kinds of things. So you just keep building and building. What happened first? What happened next? And that's been really helpful. And to me, Grace is, you know, she works with lots of writers and she's an incredible mentor. And that's been helpful for me in terms of, you know, improving my approach to story. And avoiding writing myself into a corner, which is a real problem when you're a writer and you've got, you know, 40,000 words written here and 40,000 words written there of two different stories, and you know, there's no way out, you know, they'd have to be Superman to bash the, you know, it's just a problem when you write yourself into a corner. So this new process has been very effective for me. So I'm just gonna keep working on that and see if that helps my writing evolve. So it is a process where I'm always striving and hoping that I can write something better and do something different and innovative. So yeah,
that's really cool. I've heard of that before, the snowflake or snowball.
Snowflake method. I think there is literature online. So if you look up snowflake method, it's a recognized process. You know, there's lots of different ways of doing plotting, but she's been working with me on this particular process, and I found it very effective, and she's used it very effectively to write a novel in a month kind of thing, and she's found it very helpful with her clients. So it's always great to be able to network with people and tap into the kind of resources and ideas that they're finding effective, because, you know, you try something new and see what happens. So
well, that's one of the fun things about doing the show, is that I learn something from every person. I've talked to you lots of times, and we talk privately all the time, but I always learn something from you, Lee.
Oh, that's nice. That is nice. No, I think you and I just can't help but chat, and so we often touch on these kinds of subjects, don't we?
Absolutely. We're almost at the end. I want to give you time to talk about ebook. So why don't you tell a little bit about the anthology and how people can buy it?
Oh, what was this? Sorry, which anthology is this?
You know, The Hounds of the Underworld, isn't that an anthology?
No. Hounds of the Underworld is part of a trilogy, and the second book will be coming out in the new year, sometime in mid 2018, I think. And the first book's out, and that came out in July of this year. So, yes, that's been doing very well. We're very excited about it. That's available online, Hounds of the Underworld. It's first book in the Path of Ra series, and my collaborator on that book is Dan Raybart.
And it's available everywhere?
Yes. It's available everywhere. So if you any good bookshop, you can just ask for it, and they'll get it in if they haven't already got it. So yes, it is.
And Lee's taking part in my book fair, so you can get it there too.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Yes.
But weren't you working on an anthology, or is that not ready yet?
Oh, yes. The anthology that I'm working on is with Speculative Fiction of Writers of New Zealand. So we're putting out an anthology. It's called Te Kororo Ahika, which means to keep the home fires burning. And it's basically a showcase anthology of stories and poems by New Zealand writers of science fiction and fantasy. And that'll be coming out in the new year, and that'll be available online. So, and it'll be available in print in New Zealand, I think, possibly print on demand. So that'll be coming out in about February of next year. So it's called Te Kororo Ahika. I'll write it. I'll put a link. I put the name in the comments under the blog post. But I'm looking forward to that. I think it's going to be exciting, and hopefully people will get a chance to sample some New Zealand writing.
Oh, that is a beautiful name. I've never heard it. Is that native to New Zealand, or
yes, it's a Maori term. Yes, and we thought long and hard about it, but because we wanted this as a showcase anthology, because we don't get out there, and it's got some emerging and new writers, which I think is exciting. So we're really excited to be able to present those people to the world and get some writing out there that people might not have, you know, some writers out there that people might not have seen. So I'm really proud of that. I think it's a great idea, and we are a small country, and it is hard to get heard. So I'm really proud of what our people are doing there.
Well, that's really great. We've come to the end. I want to thank you so much, Lee. You're always such a wonderful guest.
Thank you for having me, Sherry. Have a wonderful holiday period, and I'll look forward to talking to you again in the new year.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you. And thank you for chatting with Sherry.
Chatting with Sherry is brought to you by listeners like you. You can support this program by leaving a rating or a review at iTunes, at Sherry's Patreon account, patreon.com/readthebard, or by following Sherry on all the various social media at readthebard. That's RITHEBARD. Once again, that's readthebard. RITHEBARD. And thank you for chatting with Sherry.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.